This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Greg Tyler, President and CEO of the U.S. Poultry and Egg Export Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with USAPIC's Greg Tyler next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The U.S. poultry industry has been hit hard by the presence of avian influenza. It's hit production and it's limited access to some very important export markets. Greg Tyler, President and CEO of the U.S. Poultry and Egg Export Council, is in Asia now, working to maintain and open opportunities for the U.S. poultry industry.
We host an annual trade reception in Guangzhou, China. We had to take a break from that during the pandemic years, and of course, we were completely blocked out of the market for a while due to HPAI. But we started the trade reception back in last year in 2024, and we had about 400 importers from around China that showed up this year for this event. We've got over 650. So our numbers are growing despite the trade tensions that are obviously out there between the U.S. and China. There's still a lot of interest in U.S. poultry, and so the reception here has been very warm for us. We, of course, are very pro-trade and hope to continue to export to the Chinese market because for chicken feet, chicken paws, it's our big export market there, and without it, we lose a lot of money. Reception's been good.
What does the U.S. poultry industry have in Asia? Where's our leg up?
The big thing, as I mentioned, with China is, of course, the chicken paws. And if you think about what chicken paws will get at the rendering plant in the U.S., it's only about 9 cents per pound. The Chinese will pay as much as $3 per pound for chicken paws. So obviously it's a great loss to us when we cannot export there. Our biggest competition globally continues to be Brazil. We not only see that in other parts of the globe, but definitely here in Asia as well. But, of course, China is sourcing product from other sources such as Russia, and we're seeing growth in where they're importing product from. They're diversifying where they're getting product from, not only just on the poultry side, but also on the other protein side as well. We currently have 42 states banned for export to the Chinese market. Normally, it's a $1 billion export market just for our chicken paws, and we are off by more than half on that right now. We really only have Kentucky and Louisiana, which are the two of the major producers for poultry, that are allowed to export raw chicken products to the Chinese market. However, and one thing that has been a different curveball is that we have started exporting cooked chicken paws, heat-processed chicken paws, to the Chinese market. In 2023, we only had about 10,000 metric tons, valued at about $46.5 million. This year, that number has tripled. We're looking at about $120 million worth of cooked chicken paws going into the market. And so even if the states are banned out there, the Chinese will allow heat processed chicken paws into the market. With China being off, we are seeing increased exports in a number of other Asian markets like the Philippines, of course, Hong Kong, Vietnam. Philippines and Vietnam are just two of our shining stars in this region, and we're lucky to have them for our chicken products.
With regard to avian influenza, it's surely been a problem here in the U.S. How far will you have to go? How much distance will there have to be and separation from HPAI to be able to restore a normal trade or what was normal trade there in China?
Well, China is a political hotbed, and every little thing that happens out there, it can be non-HPAI related. The tariff issues that have been proposed by the incoming administration, of course, heat things up a little bit. But over the years, we've seen any little thing with political tensions play out on the trade field when it comes to poultry. And so we are hoping that we will be able to overcome some of these barriers to trade because the Chinese market is so crucial for us. It's a top market. It's been our second largest market. Right now it's not there, primarily because of the lack of ability for us to export the chicken paws into that market. HPAI is the factor that is being used by the Chinese government to keep the product out. And we do have a trade agreement with them, a regionalization agreement, that is on a state-by-state basis, but the Chinese government has not been abiding by that regionalization agreement and therefore has kept these trade restrictions on states that should have been freed up. The last time that we saw any states being removed was in November of 2023 when President Biden met with President Xi in a meeting in California, and at that time they removed 7 or 8 states from the banned list. But since that time, there have been no states that have been removed, and despite USDA's efforts to try to get the Chinese to remove those bans, they have not. The incoming administration is going to have their hands full with just enforcing some of the trade agreements that we've got in place, and China is the top of our list as far as making sure that they're meeting up to their end of the bargain and are allowing the states that should be eligible to export to go in there. But HPAI is the contributing factor to all of this. And with the ongoing situation that we have in the U.S., it has continued to create an issue when it comes to trade. Other countries will reduce down to a county level or a radius around the infection site, which allows exports to continue to flow. But those that are doing it on a state basis and not removing those state bans is where we have the problem.
Greg, are there economic factors that are affecting sales? I know the value of the dollar against other currencies, and certainly those Asian currencies have been a factor. Aside from politics, and we'll go there in a minute, but in terms of the dollars and cents, are you finding this as a major headwind?
Yeah, and I'm hearing that here in my travels within China is that inflation has hit the Chinese consumers. They're not eating out as much. They're reducing consumption of protein, especially when it comes to some of the imported products. It's not only affecting poultry, it's affecting other meat products as well. And exports from our counterparts on the red meat side are probably being affected coming into China as well. So, yes, the economy in China is definitely an issue and one that has caused decreased consumption. On the other side of the coin, though, and when it comes to U.S. production, U.S. production has, for broiler meat in particular, has increased about 1% from 2023 to 2024. The biggest change that we have seen in the U.S. is that you're seeing more dark meat being consumed on the U.S. market as opposed to previous years. Everyone always thought that the U.S. was a breast meat market, a white meat market, but changing demographics in the U.S. as well as just consumption patterns. And dark meat consumption has really skyrocketed. And there's a preference for it in not only food service, but you see it in the retail sector as well, where dark meat is being offered in the domestic market. And so normally when we would have 50% of our dark meat going to export markets, that number is lower, and more of that product is staying on the U.S. market, which creates a shortage for product available for export. And when that shortage is out there, our prices on product is higher, and it makes Brazil more competitive in those export markets where we used to export a lot of chicken leg quarters. The Brazilians have become more competitive with us at, and we're also exporting more drumsticks now because that chicken thigh meat is staying on the U.S. market more.
Greg, we didn't get a new farm bill, another extension. Let's talk about the significance of MAP and FMD funding, and even in addition, the Regional Ag Promotion Program funds that the poultry industry recently received. How is that helpful, and how are those funds important for you in your effort to maintain and to grow market share?
Well, one thing when it comes to MAP and FMD, they have been a consistent forward use of PEEC, and we normally get around $8 to $9 million, sometimes a little less, sometimes a little more on the MAP and FMD side. And that's been, one of our mainstays for years. When the Regional Ag Promotion Program came in, it was an opportunity for us to expand our efforts. And it also helped us because the dollar doesn't go as far as it used to. So when you're used to getting $8 or $9 million, 10 years ago, that $8 or $9 million doesn't stretch as far today. And so Regional Agricultural Promotion Program, or the RAP program, has really been a godsend to us. We received $19 million up under the first two tranches that have been put out there. These are programs that, of course, will be spread over a 5-6 year period. But one thing that it is allowing us to do is to continue to do research in markets where we don't have access, to work on trade and technical issues in those markets to see what we can do to overcome those barriers to trade. The one thing that we're going to have to do as an industry is also look at what products we export. I mentioned the dark meat exports being affected by the consumption in the U.S. Well, that creates a different situation for us, and we can probably explore looking at developing markets for white meat. Let's look at some of the markets for breast meat out there, and the U.S. industry is exporting some of that breast meat now, so it creates a different dynamic. The great thing is we can use the funding for the research to find out where those opportunities are, and then also use the funding to develop new markets, not only in markets that we're not in, but in some of our major markets throughout the world, try to expand the product offerings that we have out there and create a little bit of a diversity from the offerings from the U.S. poultry and egg industry.
Greg, when I talk to soybean farmers who have been in China, they suggest that the Chinese industry, they don't see conflict between industry and our domestic producers. They're well-received. Mm-hmm. But the politics are a big part of global sales. Yep. Rabobank this past week offering their analysis of what they see, that if the Trump 2.0 does include that blunt instrument of tariffs, that there's going to be consequences. How dark is the cloud of the tariff threat with where you have traveled in Asia? And is there any way to measure what significance might come toward demand for chicken paws or other product in that Asian market if those tariffs come back?
Yeah, it is a concern. I was in a meeting yesterday with some Chinese importers, and I asked them that question, and of course, they kind of skirted around the issue but let us know that it is a concern for them. It's a perfect storm when you look at how the economy is doing in China and the fact that they need cheap protein sources. So sometimes we look at that and say, well, maybe there's an avenue that, if China needs the product, then they may start easing some of these restrictions that have been clouded by politics. However, the jury is still out on how the Chinese are going to react if the tariffs are enforced. And we're not only concerned about it with China, but we're also concerned about with the proposals to impose tariffs on the Mexicans and the Canadians as well, because those are two top markets for us. Mexico is our top export destination for our broiler turkey and eggs. And what we're concerned about is if tariffs are imposed on Mexican goods coming in, the Mexicans flip around, impose tariffs on the U.S., they already have an anti-inflation policy that they put in place, which is allowing product from other suppliers like the Brazilians. And the Brazilians have come into the Mexican market and taken a share of our export market down there. And so it's a concern if you're throwing additional tariffs on U.S. products coming into Mexico, what kind of price position that's going to put us in when we are battling against the Brazilians for market share. So we are concerned about it.
Do you have enough supply to be able to satisfy global markets if you can get them? And what are the challenges, if we could come up with an answer, with vaccinations or feed additives or even genetic engineering? What makes this a darned if you do and a darned if you don't situation?
Right, and it is a difficult situation, more so with the turkey industry and the egg industry. They have been hit the hardest by HPAI, and that, of course, has affected the supply. Fortunately, U.S. turkey exports have been up this year, both in quantity and value, but egg exports are down. We reached a peak at one point where we had 4 to 5% of production of eggs being exported, and that now it's down to around 2%. And of course, you're seeing that on the U.S. domestic market with rising egg prices. And so supply is not there on the egg side. For the turkey side, it is. But with the ongoing HPA outbreaks, that, of course, affects the supply for the U.S., but also the supply for the international market. Broilers have not been as affected, but we are seeing some cases of it pop up there. I still think we're going to have ample supply on the broiler side to meet a lot of export demand. But again, this other issue with the dark meat supply staying in the U.S. is creating some issues. On the HPAI side, as you mentioned, the vaccination issue. There is a lot of talk about pushing vaccinations in certain segments of the poultry industry, not on the broiler side, but the egg industry, I know, has been pushing for that. Some of the turkey states, production states, have also been pushing for that. Our biggest concern that we see is that our trading partners will not react too favorably if a vaccination program were to start in the U.S. And if you look at our supply or what we're exporting now, we're looking at about $5.8 billion in exports for 2024. In 2022, before we started having all the HPAI issues, or when we started getting the bans in place, we hit a record $6.2 billion. So if you're looking at the trading partners saying, we're not going to allow product from the U.S. into our market because you vaccinate, and if they do a total ban, then all of that product could end up back here on the United States market because it's not being able to be exported. And so you're going to drive down prices because of a glut, a surplus of product being on the market. And not only is that going to happen, but you're also going to have poultry producers that are going to have to scale back on production as a result, and that could affect the job market long term too. So there's not an easy answer on this. One thing that we have been working with our counterparts at United Egg Producers, National Chicken Council, National Turkey Federation, and the U.S. Poultry and Egg Association on is having good conversations about how do we move forward with this. If there is going to be a vaccine strategy in place, USDA needs to know what that strategy is going to be so that they can go to the trading partners and ask them, all right, if we've got this in place and we're only going to vaccinate in one particular state, will you allow exports from the rest of the states? Or if it's a radius around where they're doing the vaccinations, will they allow product from that state except within that radius to be exported? And so moving forward, I know USDA is doing research on vaccines, and I think we need to have that ready in case something happens. And USAPIC itself is supportive of that research. However, we are not supportive of moving forward with any kind of vaccination strategy if it hurts our exports. And some of the consultations that USDA has had with some of the trading partners leading up to now, we've heard from these trading partners that they will ban exports from the United States, just like the U.S. banned product from France when France started their vaccination program on ducks. And so there's a lot of conversations that are going to have to take place. It's going to be interesting to see how the new administration coming in is going to play into this and what direction they are going to move in.
When we talk about the future for export sales for poultry and for eggs, what is the future that you see for global demand, and what are the things that you need from Washington and from the U.S. regulatory system to be successful?
Right. We think demand for poultry meat is going to continue to grow, and eggs globally. It's cheap protein, as I said. We think Latin America and Africa in particular are continuing going to be growth markets. One thing that we definitely need from Washington, from the regulators, and from USDA is to make sure that any of the trade agreements that we already have in place are being enforced. We've got three particular markets. I mentioned China already, but South Africa and Kazakhstan are two markets that are not abiding by the agreements that we have in place. So enforcement of those trade agreements by the U.S. Trade Representative's Office is crucial to us. Also, just setting up new trade agreements globally with some partners out there. Africa, I know, is one that has been a focus of previous administrations. But one thing that we want to make sure is that when we are setting up these trade agreements, whether it be a market like Kenya, for example, that they are not only helping that local industry to develop, having that country develop, but also getting better access for U.S. agricultural products, because sometimes we're left out in the cold when those trade agreements are put into place. And poultry and other industries sometimes can be sensitive in those markets, and they don't want imports of U.S. poultry meat coming in there. Our motto has always been a rising tide floats all boats. We think that we can help grow poultry consumption in a lot of those markets, not only help the local industry to grow, because we do have a sister group called the World Poultry Foundation that we work with to try to help some of these markets to grow poultry industries, but at the same time, we want them to give us access to that market, because like I said, U.S. poultry meat is a very cheap protein source and something that is needed by a lot of consumers around the globe. So moving forward, new trade agreements and enforcement of those existing trade agreements are going to be so crucial for us in order to be successful. If we have that in play, then I don't see any problem with the U.S. poultry and egg industry continuing to grow exports globally.
Well, Greg, we thank you for being the tip of the spear of finding, of opening and maintaining markets for U.S. poultry and eggs. And we especially are grateful for you taking time while on a trade mission over there and on the job of speaking with us here. We appreciate the work that you've done and taking time to talk with us here. Greg, it's open mic, and today you get the last word.
Well, I just appreciate you giving me the opportunity to just express some of the things that we've got going on with poultry and egg industry and with USAPIC in particular, but also to talk about some of the issues that we are facing out there. I know we're not the only one in the agricultural community that faces issues, and I try to convey that to my membership when I'm talking to them, is that others have their own battles to fight. But USA Peak itself, because of our network of offices, not just our Atlanta office, but the 15 other offices that we've got scattered across the globe, we've been able to be active in over 75 markets, and we're trying to continue to grow exports and find new markets for our industry, because we believe that that's the only way that our industry is going to continue to grow, is through exports. And so I appreciate the opportunity that you have given me to just talk about that with your listeners. And I look forward to having more conversations in the future about some of these issues. And hopefully there's hope for 2025 that we're going to see better access and more exports from the U.S. poultry and egg industries to our global partners.
Our thanks to Greg Tyler, President and CEO of the U.S. Poultry and Egg Export Council, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.